how do we get to a better system that doesn't need experts?
Right. And so I'm about to recognize Daniel, but just for whatever it's worth, just to articulate the way we're doing this, you're describing a requirement, in my view, for justice, which is dealt with in the current, like, public U.S. and other litigation systems by allowing witnesses and by allowing litigants to call expert witnesses in some cases to educate the finders of fact as to what happened, you know. We don't have that in anything that we're talking about right now. We're talking about, like, here's the rules, do you understand the rules, and then just throwing fastballs at them sometimes, you know. And so I want to acknowledge we don't have that, and I think the question is, how do we fill that gap with experts, with training, with some other way? But how do we fill it is what I think you're asking.
Even if you go back
Is that fair? Did I express it right?
That's very good. That's a very good way of doing it. But even if we go back to language acquisition or tooltips on, you know, when you hit a word in the post that you don't understand, you want the definition of it. You know, how do we make that interaction with the post richer so that they can, we can facilitate that interaction to make better decisions. And
beautiful.
So how do we get the metadata around the posts available and exposed? And
that's I'd volunteer to look at some of these things with you, and maybe some others in the group would like to do that as well.
That's another item on the project plan. And after we get them a review cycle, and then we ship them out to the mediators.
They're all accessible currently, and the section that dealt with dispute resolution, which I spent some time on, is easy to look at. It's not very long, and I think all your questions are appropriate.
And on a technical level. The moderation engine, and I think what we're looking at is very simple, which is there will be a URL. It's not going to be a chunk of text. Yeah. Just no matter what it is, what happens on the web is things appear on a web page, and that will be that unique identity, unique identifier for whatever is in dispute will be that simple and should then provide the context. There are issues around how that's perceived, et cetera. But I just want to tell you as a technical point how we're going into this, and we'll evaluate that aspect of it. But that's what we foresee. I think in order to sort of move to the lunch section, the one question I had is of Urs and Joey, I think what you were talking about papers, I think one thing we should ask is, are we looking at for the summer project, looking at bringing up the issues and what we think we see in terms of the test? Are we looking at actually producing something that's questions about what best practices are? I mean, where do you think in this stage, and the lit review is a great beginning point, but what do you think in the course of the summer that we're going to be able to attain or think about attaining, and what's sort of the fallback position?
But before you answer that, can we just at least wrap up the last topic? And I think it started with Urs talking about where the interconnections are with the law lab. And you mentioned various interests of the law lab. And I just want to tie that up. So while we're collaborating here, I'd like to get on the table explicitly the following things, threads that we should pick up. And then maybe look at exploring deeper and follow-on things in the fall or winter. One of them is you mentioned corporations, virtual corporations. Well, the corporation that's doing this is the eCitizen Foundation, and we're not a Vermont virtual corporation, but I'll tell you, Ray Campbell, who's going to be joining us soon, is very interested in creating work groups to do some of these pilots, including maybe future pilots that are very virtualized, so that we're experimenting with at the corporate level with the same kinds of principles that you're talking about as the wrapper to contain future multi-stakeholder pilots, because that's interesting. So there's something to talk about there. The second major, really rich vein, I think, of overlap with the law lab's interests are automated rules expressions, evolvable contracts, and things of that nature. And that's like right down the center of a lot of what we're doing. We have a major work effort, which if you're free tomorrow, I hope that you can join us at the Media Lab to discuss a little bit, or by phone, or we can keep you in the loop somehow with Just Systems in a leadership role and many other great people looking at XBRL and statutes. We have XML on contracts through an OASIS standard that we've already helped. I was the chairman of an OASIS committee for e-contracts. We have a 1.0, you know, recognized international standard out of OASIS on contracts. We're not going to use that, but we have some experience with contracts that we can apply here. We'll do something much simpler than what we did with OASIS. And then finally, we have some way that we're going to be expressing with David Colarusso a set of applicable rules for dispute resolution, or a procedural and a mini rule level of the terms and condition rules. These are all areas where we're automating rules, in a sense. We're expressing them electronically and making them so that they can trigger events, like web services. So I think there's an overlap area with what you're looking at with evolvable contracts.
And just to elaborate on that, I mean, I'm trying to visualize. You're saying you're implementing rules and you can automate. Could you give us an example?
Yeah, example number one, this set of questions that's being asked and then what happens with 70% thresholds this way or that way is a set of automated rules at the mini level of ODR. At the next level of formality, we're going to have a bunch of contracts. And you want to know what? I mean, we'll have to talk about this, and I'm sure we'll agree in the end, but I imagine those are all going to be electronic contracts. I'm not going to send paper to people that participate in our tests. That's grotesque. I want them to fill out a web form and electronically agree, and we'll have literally electronic contracts to effectuate things. But we'll also and then the final one is we're marking up statutes right now, the Recovery Act and some health reform.
They're compensated for that, and they're subject to a contract, the provisions of a contract, is that right?
Our mediators and participants.
The notion was just that there'll be a terms of use kind of system that we'll have, because you're not going to have paper contracts and counterparts and all that kind of stuff, I guess.
That's exactly right. Yeah, like when we have 200 moderators, mediators to sign up from our partner organizations, they'll agree to some simple little terms and conditions that, you know, they're participating with us, like our data will be part of a research report, we'll do this, we'll do that. Well, there'll be some contract, and it will in fact be an electronic contract under UEDA and eSign. And we're also going to be looking at the higher level of public law, which will be statutes, not regs or anything at this point. We're going to be literally marking up U.S. congressional and like executive branch signed statutes in XBRL that would make sense to OMB and would make sense to the clerk of the House and the Senate. We're dealing with those people in a work group I think you would find really fun to be in.
And that part of the making it transparent, I guess, being when you're making them, putting them in XML.
Amen.
Okay.
I think Daniel had some.
Trying to think. So how do you enforce your comment? Do you have an idea of what performance for on a contract is and how you might enforce it? I mean, one of the things that we're interested in, I mean, is that once you get in the network, you know, and depending on how people are identified or pseudo-identified, then you can see everything they do.
Yeah.
And therefore, you can develop a reputation and you quickly can see compliance. And then, you have obviously a way of enforcing it or not. I just wanted that, and I'm interested in that.
We haven't talked about the specifics yet, but there's one thing that just a brief aside. You know, Nokia is doing that thing in Kenya with the translations. I don't know if you heard about that, where they have the Maasai tribesmen who speak 60 dialects in Kenya, yep. Apparently, and they have a thing where it's a system-based incentive program. There's no contracts, no nothing. A tribesman
right.
Who come call and they'll do a translation, and if they do a translation for half an hour, they get a free week of cell phone time. So that's the incentive.
And they have a currency and
the currency is embedded in the system. Right. It's like the Cotone and
right.
token in Italy. But the thing about they'll do a translation, they'll put a phrase out there, they'll have a bunch of different groups translate it, and depending on how well you do vis-a-vis the group, gives you a reputational benefit, which gives you greater compensation. So it's all systemically designed without a contract. It's a compensation for translation services. There's no contract. It's just a system.
But you have to. I'm broken record here. But you have to have some identity system, a persistent identifier.
That yeah,
it's kind of there. It's just their cell phone.
It's right. Their cell phone, which yeah. can be gained.
Right.
But yeah. Okay.
So the other key thing
right.
is that
I'll hand it off to different.
Yeah, and our other key thing. Thank you for mentioning. I forgot. But the first thing we ever did with the eCitizen Foundation, and a key thing is identity. And so we've worked with the iCard Foundation others to begin to look at identity. We have a particular concepts around it that we'd like to share with you in the fullness of time that are kind of parallel, I think, to what we're doing with ODR. But we have ideas for how to have an identity system that would be appropriate for civic engagement with civic ID and some things that wouldn't be a federal government identity system on a federal government, you know, Drupal sort board. It would actually be something far... But it also wouldn't be real ID, and we'd like to talk to you about how we imagine triangulating that in a certified, accredited way.
There's a lot of stuff going now in the government to do that, both
yeah.
with the GSA,
exactly.
But also then Social Security. There's
yep.
there's a recognition of having something that's interoperable across agencies, and then actually was scaled to support the four levels LOAs.
One day we want to talk about having eCitizen be like a player in that space and helping be a provider of legitimate eCitizen civic IDs that would be appropriate for full boat civic engagement with ODR and with dialogue and with everything.
I think that's one of the things that's starting to happen. That's right.
So, yeah. So Daniel, you had a couple of words, and I think Urs and I are going to do some wrap up with Ethan and next steps and then lunch.
I think I asked a question and
if you can just dance. Yeah.
The question was kind of about what the research agenda is
for
the next few months. Well, I have kind of a sketch of it. It starts with two basic research questions. The first is just, is crowdsourced ODR a viable project? Will it work? And something like online dispute resolution, can that function be performed by a crowd? That's the starting question. And the answer to that is yes. Can one platform be designed to deal with a range of disputes, or do we have to kind of tailor a platform to the different types of disputes that a person opt out of the game? So kind of the first stage is just looking at it conceptually, looking at crowdsourcing, looking at ODR, taking them apart, looking at what the different variables are, and then trying to put them back together. The second part is sort of coming up with a conceptual design for what a platform would look like. And then thinking about whether one platform is going to be able to account for all of these. And then the third stage is this collaboration, actually building a platform, getting empirical results, and testing that, and going back to those original research questions.
And then that will be expressed in papers or something at the end.
Okay.
Thanks, Daniel. Anything else before we go to close out next steps? May I just ask, since you asked at the beginning of the meeting, Mr. Evans, what you'd mentioned, you're asking about AI and the law and how much overlap there is. And now that you've heard a little bit more about where we're at and you have more context, is there anything else that you think we need to look at now, or is that maybe stuff to look at later?
Well, I have a general observation, and it is that I think the crystal radio analogy was good. I've been in a lot of situations where groups who have not necessarily worked together before are in early stages of having to find their footing, where people don't necessarily share disciplinary perspectives and have similar groundings. And that's always going to be a confounding factor in work like this. Mm-hmm. I think that ultimately you have to be very clear about what the goals of your summer activity will be. For example, if you were writing a report, what would you want to be able to say in that report today about what you learned on your summer project?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very careful about overgeneralizing from the kind of experiments and data you're going to collect. The whole issue of design is critical. There are just legions of cases where extraordinarily good scientific designs have fallen on the floor because they're politically not viable. Ranging from voting procedures to statistical sampling for census counts to any number of other kinds of issues. I think the critical and hard issues you've got to look at are less about technology and less about even the AI and law kinds of modeling of arguments and structures of what you might call the formal structure of the dispute, but really issues around trust, transparency, definitions of concepts. People should be held responsible for the terms they use, and those should be transparent as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if my view about conception is that, you know, life begins at the moment of conception, that's going to be a part of my definition of what a fetus is or anything else that should be attached to me and my identity, because that will allow other people to interpret or not whatever I say. These issues will show up again and again.
Thank you. That was helpful. I'm glad I asked you. Unless there's anything further, why don't we move to next steps? And Urs, would you mind leading us? Starting it at
actually,
least?
Actually, it seems to me we've been talking a lot, so probably this is a great opportunity to get back into play. Some of the people have been very good listeners, so kind of throwing the ball back to those who have very patient, listening a lot. Ethan, you've been listening. Been very quiet this morning, so I'm eager. Probably we can just go around and ask, what are your takeaways? What are your impressions from these conversations? And what strikes you as the conceptual challenge, or based on your experience, mm-hmm. of course, and your work in the space.
I think one goal is to avoid disputes among the people sitting around the table. I think that there is a division of labor that has been set out, and it's probably a useful, very useful way to begin. I think there's a need for ongoing dialogue between yourself and people designing a system. The use of the word trust didn't come up in conversation at all today until just mentioned, and actually the dispute resolution field, that's a big concept. It's a big concept for two reasons. One is dispute resolution is not simply about resolving disputes. It's about building trust so that people will use systems. If people don't have trust in a particular system, they're not going to use it. That's often forgotten. The other thing slips my mind. Carolyn, the one thing I did want to remember is I hope you get everybody's name. I will send them to Beth and let her know who was here.
Absolutely, and we'll write up these takeaways in some of the notes as well.
Stephanie, you've been a listener too today, mostly.
Well, I think it's very helpful for me because agencies are just starting to engage in this process and struggle with these issues. And we've looked to the U.S. to the federal implementations as guidance, but the biggest struggle I think to make this effective is to figure out that ground between merely creating online a open park for protest where anyone can come say who has a permit and say whatever they want as long as it's not inciting imminent lawless action, versus like a regulatory scheme or a decision making or a legislative process where we do have institutionalized processes to try to come to an effective decision. And how do we increase collaboration, increase the opportunity for collaboration while still making those decisions? So it seems like we're right in the preliminary stage of how do you regulate the public forum versus how do you gather information that's helpful to ultimately making a decision, to actually being useful in government. So,
is it fair to say that Beth or Robin said that they had the same goal, meaningful decision making, and they did that by reducing the numbers of people who were participating?
That's very interesting because that's what happens right now in the regulatory process: is that interested groups put forth experts that end up being credentialed, and then the legislatures listen and weigh and decide. And so it seems like this effort is really not just about collaboration, but an opportunity to collaborate and to get your say in there, but how to marry that.
I mean, they seemed very aware of how cumbersome the final system they used, this mixed ink system. I don't know if anybody else has used it. It was very cumbersome. It was very slow. And unless you were really interested, you weren't going to be involved in it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the previous phase, which was a blog, which was quite easy to use.
Yeah. And that's more like a parade.
I should say,
more like open up the Boston Common for protests. Yeah.
Well, they called me. They must have called other people who said, they said, oh, here's this. I wasn't even aware it was, at some point it was going on. Was relevant to me, so I spent some time with it, and I'm sure they got other people. But if you weren't seriously interested, the systems were, the last system in particular, was too slow, too complex, too cumbersome.
Yeah.
And I think it dissuaded. They went down to 380 people in the country.
Well, it's funny. It may be appropriate to reduce the numbers because that's what the current system does, right? You want to go to court, it's going to cost a lot. Yeah. You need a lot of experts, but maybe not reducing it on the basis of just making it cumbersome. You got to really want to climb the mountain to ask the question, but maybe the mountain climbing needs to be more specifically crafted.
Of it very similar to the regulatory process, where if there's regulations that are up for comment, anyone has an opportunity to comment on those regulations, but what regulations will be most effective are those that are bring knowledge, are on topic, have a force behind them, and how do you enhance that through opportunity of more people? It's difficult to get to the regulatory hearing when it's 10 a.m. and it's, you know, about...
Well, just to give you a data point, CyberSettle settles about 17,000 disputes a year. And this is, to your point of depth, this is a dispute where there are two parties who are at odds and real dollars have to exchange in order for the dispute to be resolved. So once people get familiar with it, it is a process and it's a procedure that they will use.
And doesn't eBay do millions? Did somebody say?
47.
40 million. Yeah. 47.
So there you have, you know, again, it's the scaling of the
big
whole
numbers.
Yeah.
So where we're at, just very quickly, to what you were saying, and Ethan, I think what we're trying to do now, I think you're describing, to use the metaphor, let's just say you're describing like a car that is the decision car that we want to enable citizens
sure,
to help
yeah,
drive
yeah,
around
yeah.
in, as opposed to just whatever. So right now, I think what we're doing is we've got a chassis and we've kind of got four wheels, but it doesn't go yet. So right now we're like, okay, so we know we want a car that allows for decision making with the public, and we've kind of got a general design here, but right now we don't have the right fuel mixture to even make it start because we have got too much noise in the signal. So one of the preliminary things we have to do is, like, we need a carburetor and we need an emission system, and that's where I think theoretically, online dispute resolution mm-hmm. of what is a valid contribution to a civic dialogue system fits. So we need to get like a fuel emission system, and we need to get an exhaust system and a few other things. You know, not that it's bad, just needs to work so that we can have a fuel mixture or whatever, a signal-to-noise ratio necessary for the vehicle to work. So you can, in fact, then have a solid footing to allow participation and decision-making. There'll be a bunch of other stuff we'll have to figure out for that to be good.
Right.
I imagine. I think that's where we're at in this. I don't know. What do you think? Who knows?
Struggling with the metaphor.
Yeah, I don't know. It's preliminary infrastructure and architecture, I think, that we're doing
it's
to enable
1.0.
broad-scale civic participation.
So I just want to add one more thing, because I work with like SEC regulations and FASB and IFRS and accounting, generally accepted accounting principles, things that are really dense that citizens just don't have the opportunity to understand. And I think one of the keys besides the infrastructure is maybe the windshield wipers.
There you go.
The thing that gives some clarity to the regulations, because even if it's at 10 a.m. and I'm on the West Coast, so it's 7 a.m. for me, I don't know if I can mine through 450 pages around the commentary to make a valid comment on a new regulation or a new ruling by FASB or the SEC as a citizen. So what I'm really interested in is, as I want the infrastructure in place, I want the contributions, but also the simplification and the making that content that you want commentary on easier for people to scrutinize, because right now it's the domain of experts.
Does anybody remember Pointcast?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Right?
Yeah, early days.
Yeah, all right. Those of us, don't be sorry, because you want to be that age. So here was a system that basically was, it pointed and it cast to the point that's there. And what it missed, and then what it went out to do, is to find people who were to take your piece of legislation that was complicated. But what you did is said, okay, what would be the consequences of this? So to the user, let's take it's a FASB rule, or let's say it's an SEC rule and so forth, that said, if these 400 pages are enacted, here are the five things that would result. So it's a piece of legislation that says, you no longer can smoke on the street. You no longer can smoke in a restaurant. So when you did that for the consumer, then what the consumer did is it said, this is now relevant to me. This is something that I'm now interested in. They didn't have to read the 40 pages or the 400 pages. What they did is they reacted to what the consequences were.
It's the interpretation of those and deciding what those consequences are that I think is...
Well, that's where the Pointcast was.
Yeah,
they had, and I hate to use this word, subject matter experts, but they're the ones that did the interpretation of what the consequences would be.
So eventually... Eventually,
to John's point about networks, that's why the networking is so important and not just the community.
Right. By way of segueing, I think, toward wrap-up, for my personal path toward this, one of the initial projects was called OpenGov Project of the Media Lab at MIT, where we went to Westboro and some other towns that had town meeting, and we worked with the town meeting moderators and other people to figure out what would it take to allow citizens of your town that were otherwise eligible to vote if they showed up in person to come out on a web browser. Because some of the big meetings, you know, they had to have auxiliary rooms and other places with closed circuit anyway, and it's like you're raising your hand and you're waiting. Like, you could really be at home for this really, if we could have trustworthy systems, identity, and a few other things. And we had to figure out under the mass statutes and all the local rules and other applicable rules, what would it take? And so it would have required statutory and other reforms, but nonetheless, we modeled it. And one of the key things that we came out with theoretically, you know, years ago, was that we felt that the interpretation and characterization, we felt for a democratic system, unlike maybe a corporate system or research system or a system that sought maybe intelligence and expertise over fairness and participation, but for a democratic system where we want to hear from everybody equally, we felt that actually that should be itself the subject of an online dialogue and a dispute resolution process, and you could see, like, whatever, majority interpretation, you know, alternate interpretation. You should actually be able to see, almost like the Secretaries of State, a voter guide for a referendum, the top four, top argument against, but it wouldn't be from the lobbyists or a few people. It would, in fact, be rated from the bottom up. So that every element of the system would recursively use democratic processes. I'm glad to be able to say that to somebody outside of an academic lab where only four people had any idea what I was talking about, but maybe one day we'll get there, and in the meantime, we'll figure out how to get to the first step. So the first step now brings us to the next steps and then to lunch. I think next steps, by way of wrap-up, are that that we would like to have a telephone call with this august group with a couple of folks that couldn't join us, Ray Campbell and some other people, to take a look at our initial set of questions, which we'll send by email, and we'll try to talk to Beth and others to crisp them up for an appropriate use case, and Linda, hopefully, and we'd like feedback on that in the call to talk about what questions we'll be giving to David Colarusso. So that would be in about a week. We'd like to ideally have a call. You don't have to be on the call. You can do it by email, but just at least to give a deadline, you know, a time. And we'll schedule it around your availability. The other next step is we'd like about a week after that to schedule another call. And I appreciate some people won't be able to be on every project call. That's fine. And then we'll take a look at David's API draft. So we'll review that and we'll have some time to. And then about a week after that, we'd like to have a third call. So it'd be basically weekly calls for a while through the rest of the summer, which any individual may only need to be on one or two of those. But what we would do then is basically look at the final everything that we're doing to do this test and make sure that we agree with it, we've got it done, we've got decisions on it that make sense to the coordinating committee. And then for about 2 weeks after that, we're just going to have it operating. It'll be transparent so everybody can see what's happening and we can talk about it, but basically we're going to let it run. And then we'll about a week after that, we'd like to get a call together to evaluate what we think the initial results are based on the reports that we run from the server and so forth. And then about a week after that, in my fantasy world, we would then have a draft, you know, set of, you know, PowerPoint slides and maybe like a one or two pager describing what we think just happened and what we did and what the open questions are or whatever, right? And then a couple of weeks after that, if assuming it all looks good and everyone finally agrees on the final wording and the final slides and whatever, we would actually like stand up and do like an hour or two, a little presentation at the end of the project presentation mid-September of what we did. And we'd probably do that, the eCitizen Foundation would probably fund that. And we probably mention a couple of other projects we're doing with XBRL and statutes and some things, but we basically feature, this is our summer project, we'd like to hear from IRS and Ethan and MIT and the basic partners either by video or in person. And we just describe it. We'd put that on our websites, and then we would be done. That would be the end of this project. So I think those are the next steps. Does that sound reasonable to everyone? I'm going to add two steps. One is a review cycle on the disputes when we get them, and a second one would be we'd like to follow up with you and with Ethan specifically on beginning to write the letters and approving the letters from our partners, possibly from the Berkman Center. We'll have to talk about who it should come from to have the most impact, but to the American Arbitration Association, to NAF, and some of the arbitrators, or some of the arbitration mediation firms where we'd be soliciting volunteer mediators to help us out. But we could do it from eCitizen Foundation, probably we could do it from MIT, but we need to send them an invitation at some point. I'd like to ask you, who do we address that to and what do we say?
Sure.
And I believe that's everything. Is it? So then I give you back the podium, Urs, if you'd like to say any closing words and adjourn us.
Just like to thank you all again for coming here, and I'm happy to invite you now to a small lunch. It's out there, I guess, and so let's grab some food and kind of have an informal conversation over lunch. And again, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you for hosting us and for partnering. Great. Thanks, everybody. Adjourned.
Oh, Vancouver.
write up that research on someone.
Yeah, I totally did. Well, write up is like, that's a little overkill. But I have an open courseware, thanks to
Ann colleague. Yeah.
I've put all of the semesters in place. Like, we have pictures of me and like 7 grad students like sitting in town meeting, like tabulating things. And like we described, we have a big PowerPoint slide that shows our imaginary MIT film, which would be like a new Massachusetts town. It would otherwise be just like every other town.
I'd be interested to see.
And I can show you what we did. It's like a grad student.